As a former FBI agent and chairman of the House Intelligence Committee, I had oversight of all 16 of our nation's intelligence agencies. My name is Mike Rogers. I had access to classified information gathered by our operatives, people who risked everything for the United States and our families. You don't know their faces or their names. You don't know the real stories from the people who lived the fear and the pressure.
Until now.
I know most people don't understand undercover work. It's the ultimate deception and betrayal. A good undercover borrows from the craft of an actor. However, I think the stark differences are perhaps more significant. An actor is performing for an audience that is voluntarily suspending disbelief to participate in the fantasy. An undercover is performing for a primary audience that is desperately trying to unmask him. The difference is, we're not actors. Undercovers can suffer disastrous physical calamities as a result of the job, where what does happen and what doesn't happen in a given meeting can literally mean the difference of life or death. I don't think everyone is appropriate for this kind of work, but I live for it.
After the first invasion in Iraq, insurgency started against the U.S. forces, homegrown insurgencies, Iraqis fighting against us, and then foreigners that came into Iraq to fight against the U.S. IEDs were used, improvised exploded devices were used against our forces, and men were being killed, men were being maimed. Civilians were being killed and maimed by these IEDs.
Insurgents use innocuous household items and shells to make improvised explosive devices, or IEDs.
Whenever you are dialing this number on the cell phones, then there is activating and the IED goes off.
One wrong move almost certainly means serious injury or death.
When you look at it, an IED, there's millions of little parts. And as we looked into it more, we started to see the IEDs used in Iraq against our military. And it was determined that U.S. parts were in the composition of those IEDs. So our concern was that U.S. parts were being used against our military personnel, maiming and killing young men. We had to put a stop to that.
I was an agent assigned to the SAC Philadelphia HSI office. Homeland Security Investigations, better known as HSI, is the second largest investigative agency in the federal government. We're located within the Department of Homeland Security, and we're charged with investigating illicit trade, travel, and finance. We were focused on arms and our controlled technology being exported out of the United States.
The impetus for this operation did not originate at a high governmental level. At the Department of Justice level, there was no funding to do this kind of case. The idea really was coming from the local agents. So what we did was we built a team. Everybody brought something to the table. It was sort of like the Beatles. I think we were better together than apart.
John's background was local police. He had done a lot of good work as a federal agent, and he was definitely a cop's cop.
I decided that we needed a prosecutor on board to be a partner, collaborator. So I knocked on Dave Hall's office, introduced myself, and essentially I gave him a sales pitch. Dave was an easy sell, I'll be honest with you. He bought on pretty quickly.
We talked about the goal of this operation, which, you know, was to go after international arms dealers who were supplying adversaries of the United States. The question was, how are we going to do that?
So at some point in 2003, we started doing some aggressive work in an undercover capacity, specifically involving counterproliferation. We had an undercover establishment called Cross International.
We were operating a front company in downtown Philadelphia that purported to be a dirty U.S. broker.
It was essentially a combination of warehouse space and office space.
We had to be a legitimate business if you hope to get business. I was fairly new to the federal agent job. I was put into an undercover role very quickly after I came on because I had previous military and police experience.
And he had outstanding personality for meeting people, greeting people, and for, you know, giving the appearance of a real salesman.
And so I was working undercover as Patrick Lynch with Cross International. Undercover work is stressful, very stressful, because you have to always be who you are not.
Our strategy was we would target people trying to threaten the United States by acquiring U.S. military technology, develop a relationship with them, sell them the part to show that they're predisposed to violate the laws of the United States.
What we were trying to do was act like a real business. Our development problem really was the same that any business would have, which is, how do you get customers? Which, in our case, were arms dealers who were already doing illegal deals. One way you do that is to have, you know, a good website. We've tried to supply coded language that indicated that we were willing to cut corners, because you don't say that outright. You know, we can assist in your unconventional export requirements. So we were operating undercover for maybe a year before we got a really credible target.
He only identified himself to us as Alex Dave. He had sent a RFQ, a request for quote.
Request for quote. So the bad guy says, I want 10 of this. What's the price you can give me?
He asked for a very wide range of military components, and some actually we assessed as being potentially for nuclear weapons purposes.
Obviously, this is an individual who is trying to get U.S.-controlled technology, weapon systems. It's scary as hell, because you don't know who exactly you're dealing with.
He was using some type of process that would always mask his final IP address, but we finally figured that out and determined his real name.
It turned out to be a guy named Amir Rockefeller.
And he was located in Iran. And we had received information that IEDs were being manufactured in Iran and then being sold to the insurgency in Iraq. Prior to 1979, the United States provided the military infrastructure to support Iran's defenses. They were an ally. We had good diplomatic relations with them. And they purchased everything pretty much from the United States as it related to their military infrastructure. In 1979, the Shah of Iran lost his reign as the supreme leader. An anti-U.S. regime took over. They took our embassy by storm, took 400-plus American diplomats hostage. In November 1979, we ended all diplomatic relations with Iran. Iran's entire military infrastructure is based on U.S. products. So to maintain that, they require U.S. parts. They could not take their military defenses down and rebuild it again. So radar, sonar, all the military components that they would need to keep their defenses operating, they had obtained from the U.S., but they had to do it illegally.
I think it's important to keep in mind what Iran has been doing over the past several decades. I mean, one is it's been developing a nuclear weapons program. Secondly, it's been supporting terrorism internationally. And third, it's been developing a ballistic missile program. And all of these activities are direct threats to U.S. national security. And they all depend on the acquisition of military components that are made in the United States. This was our big chance. Something significant had to be done. When we first established Cross International as an undercover operation, one of the early inquiries we got from an Iranian arms dealer, a guy named Amir Ardabelli. He asked for a very wide range of military components, and some actually we assessed as being potentially for nuclear weapons purposes. This guy is clearly bad news, so we needed to start a relationship with him in order to make a case like this happen. Ardabelli used to send us requests for, hundreds of requests for quotation, and we were constantly providing him quotes, and for the most part, he was not, closing the deal.
We had a lot of instances where he committed to us through email that he was going to procure something. We would provide banking information, and the money would never come.
We almost had nothing from him and largely wrote him off because he wasn't really dealing with us. So we weren't sure if he got spooked, he saw something he didn't like, which happens, or he's just flighty and didn't want to deal with us anymore.
It's a never-ending learning curve. Running an undercover business is a tedious process because we're really not business people.
We are trying to figure out, are we doing things the right way? Because we're not in this trade. What we are pretending to be in this trade.
So that's why we needed to learn more about the illegal international arms market.
Basically, we needed help.
We had a star confidential source.
An informant from Great Britain named he had been an arms dealer for a long time. He was extremely well known in that world. He'd been working in it for decades, and he had many friends and many enemies. And he knew a great deal about how to traffic arms illegally internationally. And he told us how he had accomplished that over his career. He was providing us with the introductory course on how to become an arms dealer. He did say that in terms of dealing in that marketplace, you had to see and be seen. If you're nothing but a web presence, people are going to question your legitimacy.
You have to be at the arms shows, you have to be at the air shows. So we ended up going to the Dubai Air Show in 2005.
Dubai International Air Show is an annual exhibition of aircraft, and it's attended by major U.S. and foreign aircraft manufacturers, people who supply aviation components, and the whole aviation industry participates in that. If you're an international arms dealer and you're trying to acquire U.S. components, it's a great place to meet people. One of the things did with us was to accompany PJ and another agent to the air show in order to create a true physical presence in the marketplace and to basically vouch for us.
We tried to set up some meetings prior to going, and once we reached out, we'd finally made contact again with Ardabelli.
We had emailed him and told him we were going to be there at the air show and thought it might be plausible for him to make the short flight to Dubai from Iran. We started engaging with him again, and he was so persistent that we thought maybe he'd be willing to meet with us.
So we went to the Dubai air show, but he didn't show up. I don't think at that point there was enough of a comfort level with us that he wanted to come and meet with us.
We're all feeling significant pressure at this point to succeed. The Department of Justice is not particularly encouraging of these kinds of cases. They are highly risky from their point of view. You're spending a lot of time and resources on something without anything positive to say about it, but we felt this is the sort of thing that you can't fail at. It was a very important operation in our minds. That's because it was about national security. We wanted to take down international arms dealers who were actually arming an adversary of the United States. And Artibelli was a very serious threat to national security in terms of his activities as an arms dealer. The question was, what was our next step going to be? PJ and another agent went to the Dubai International Air Show, but Artibelli was not there. The question was, what was our next step going to be? Enemies of the United States were arming themselves with U.S. munitions. So that accentuated the importance of arresting Artibelli. We'd been at this a long time, so we all felt that pressure. But it was clear to us that it was not going to be enough for us to be operating in the way that we had been.
So we started trying to think what we could do and kind of shake up the undercover. Did we need to move the platform?
I thought from a business perspective, it might be better if we had the appearance of being a European-based company.
We knew that arms dealers were especially concerned when dealing directly with a U.S. company.
So I reached out to our attaché office in Germany and asked if they would be interested in partnering with us, because I knew Darius was on staff.
Darius was a special agent with Homeland Security, posted in Europe.
Darius' reputation, it was a sterling reputation, specifically as an undercover. Very smart, multilingual, very aggressive agent.
Is Darius his real name?
No, Darius is not his real name. Darius is a persona he's taken on to use as his identity when he deals with bad guys.
I did my first undercover deal in 1979. And so, having worked in the arms and technology arena as long as I did, in this case, I just saw that there was a great opportunity to make a case against someone genuinely involved in the black market arms trade.
Darius came to Philadelphia, where we sat down and came up with some outstanding ideas that would give us good bona fides as a European business entity. And then we began to go forward in Europe.
So I went back to Frankfurt, Germany, and opened a business.
Cross International now had a European storefront that was run by Darius. That took away the direct U.S.-Iran connection, and now that established a middleman in Europe.
And then, again, we asked to vouch for us. He had already vouched for the U.S. company, and now we asked him to tell international arms dealers that, you know, Darius was who he said he was. This was a crucial moment. And so sent Artibelli an email saying, this is somebody you might want to be dealing with. He might be very helpful to you. And Artibelli eventually responded that he had been waiting for such an opportunity.
It changed the game.
He was very interested in this. The idea made sense to him because, in fact, this is the way a lot of black market operations work.
Artibelli had been waiting to deal with a European company that could obtain U.S. parts. The first set of communications were all about, you know, familiarizing themselves with one another. They were not about any particular transaction.
Every keystroke is calculated. Every oral conversation is one where every word counts. There's a lot of things that can go wrong, and that's the business.
Darius is very serious about his craft. He was pretending to be from this Eastern European country, was speaking in a Russian accent, and he was able to create that, you know, that myth with some effectiveness.
We were haggling over price, and it seemed like every third day he was submitting another request for one new item of technology or another, and we'd jump through hoops on our end to get him a price. Then he wouldn't follow through with a purchase order. So he was a frustrating character to deal with, but this is the dance of doing a deal. I'm trying to deny the enemy the ability to build war machines, but to interrupt the transaction, you've got to be in the transaction. And were we concerned that he might never do a deal? Of course. But eventually, he committed to buying some phase shifter microchips. What these are little computer chips that are applicable to an air search radar.
They track military aircraft in the sky and are used for targeting, aiming, and shooting them. He was buying an item that would be potentially used against our Air Force.
The initial round of chips was 1,000, and he was going to pay $88,000 for them with a 12% down payment. We're moving from the talk phase to the walk phase.
When the money actually finally did hit the bank account and, you know, it was verified, okay, we've gotten the wire, then it was really real. Now we could culminate the deal and get them. Arthur Beely wanted to purchase 1,000 phase shifters. They are used in phased array radar.
They track military aircraft in the sky and are used for targeting, aiming, and shooting them. He was buying an item that would be potentially used against our Air Force.
Our job was to go, provide the merchandise, and once he was comfortable with the merchandise, he was gonna pay us the remaining amount.
So as Darius's interactions with Arthur Beely become more and more concrete, we're trying to determine what the end game will be. Where are we gonna meet with him? Where are we gonna arrest him? And do we know we can extradite him from that place?
I propose to Amir that we do the exchange of the hardware in Tbilisi, Georgia. Georgia was a logical choice from my standpoint because it was fairly close geographically to Iran, hoping he'd feel comfortable about going there.
Arthur Beely was on board with this, but you need permission from the Republic of Georgia to have an undercover meeting and possible arrest and extradition following that undercover meeting. So in August of 07, Darius, PJ, and I went to the Republic of Georgia to meet with the police to talk to them about our operational objectives and also to meet with the prosecutor general to get her concurrence with our plan. She agreed to it in concept, but told me that she would need a diplomatic note that would come from the United States to the Republic of Georgia making this request. So we left the Republic of Georgia with a deal. Everything is completely on track for success.
It was myself, John Malandra, Dave Hall, and Darius that traveled to Republic of Georgia to do the undercover meet.
October 1st was a Monday. We arrived in the Republic of Georgia that weekend. Darius is communicating with Arthur Beely and telling him, I'm in Georgia, I'm ready for you.
On the day of Arthur Beely's arrival at the Tbilisi airport, Dave Hall and I were gonna be keeping eyes on Darius. We wanted to make sure Darius certainly was safe. Second of all, we wanted to see if we made that first call with Arthur Beely, his arrival. Because you never know if they're gonna show up.
At the time, this was a high anxiety event because we can do everything right, but the bad guy has to commit the crime for this to be a success. So the mood of the moment was tense.
And then he appeared. We certainly saw Arthur Beely, and then immediately, almost attached to him, was what appeared to be an 80-year-old man. And Dave and I looked at each other and say, who's that?
there's this other guy with him, and we don't know who this guy is. We're thinking all kinds of things. I mean, is this an Iranian intelligence services officer? Is this, you know, who is this guy? So now we have this other person in the mix. We have no idea really who he is or what he's doing there. But outside, Darius is in role. He's wearing wraparound shades. He's got these huge bodyguards next to him.
I met Amir at the baggage claim. Now, as it turns out, he was with his father.
Artibelli says it's my dad. Age-wise, it looks about right. But we're still wondering, like, why do you bring your father to this arms deal in the Republic of Georgia?
I looked at Amir's eyes. Host of body language cues you can pick up from someone in that situation. But there was no apprehension in him whatsoever. So it seemed like we were good to go.
We worked with the Georgians ahead of time to set up the 2 days staying. The room itself was completely wired. We had a room next door to that that was a staging room where we had all the equipment and extra personnel to surveil it. And then the entire hotel was basically under surveillance as well.
We made a plan for what information we were trying to get from him. For example, we wanted more admissions as to his knowledge that this was illegal under U.S. law. We wanted him to explain that he knew that these were military components. And then, of course, we wanted to complete the transactions. This is where Darius and PJ would do what they had to do and become international arms dealers.
When an undercover is doing his or her job properly, they're operating on different levels simultaneously. The first level is being cognizant of the cameras and microphones so that the right people are facing the right camera at the right time.
You gentlemen would like to drink tea or coffee or whatever you want to drink.
Another level where the UC is working is performing for the primary audience. That's the suspect.
Whatever you want to drink, we will have the people downstairs making you.
It was consistent with my role to be as charming as possible. Every case might be very different. I have, on occasion, done the exact opposite, tried to raise somebody's anxiety level when it served the purpose.
Dangerous man,
The work of an undercover is similar to that of a high-priced call girl. I am what you want me to be. And making Amir as happy and comfortable as possible was likely to disarm him.
As we purported ourselves to be essentially cousins and very close in a business relationship, and I didn't know Darius very well. So the level of nervousness, it's very, very stressful. You gotta remember, I was fairly new to the job. You know, if you think of someone that goes undercover, it's not me, necessarily. It's also scary as hell. You gotta think about what you're doing all the time. If Darius and I weren't on the same page, or if Artibelli was to figure out what was going on, obviously, that's not good for us.
My
father
say,
you're
shabby.
Shabby,
you are
similar to
get.
Every moment in the case, it could fall apart.
Well, we have the same blood, but his side of the family married into Irish. I am all Eastern Europe, but his mother is Irish.
This is kind of like taking a soap bubble, trying to get it in the air, and then by blowing, keep it aloft as you take it from San Diego to Paris. Every moment while you're playing with it, it could pop.
Whatever you want to drink, we will have the people downstairs make for you.
We had just succeeded in luring Artibelli from Iran to the Republic of Georgia, to have this undercover meeting and this arrest, but we needed to get significant information in order to make this case happen. This is where Darius and PJ would do what they had to do.
I can't show you something yet.
It was consistent with my role as the undercover to be as charming as possible.
So that you have your father's memory of his time in Georgia.
Making Amir as happy and comfortable as possible was likely to disarm him.
These are pictures of my country.
The UC must be not merely credible and convincing, the UC must demonstrate complete psychological domination. Once we got through with our elaborate pleasantries, we got down to business.
How much is it?
It's 1,000.
1,000.
We did have flash chips. We had gone to MACOM, the manufacturer, and they put together a box. There were real chips on top and blanks underneath that looked just like real chips. And the idea was that he would accept delivery and then wire the rest of the money to our undercover account.
I think I could provide money for you for 2 weeks. After 2 weeks.
So 2 weeks we get the rest of the payment from our rent.
Okay.
The phase shifters, they track military aircraft in the sky and are used for targeting, aiming, and shooting them.
And for our evidence, we needed Darius to get him to say that he knew that these were military components.
They needed 15,000 pieces of this part. Why are they buying so many?
The third level where the UC is working is performing for the jury.
They are making a special rudder.
Rudder?
Laser rudder.
Radar.
One needs to get the information and the evidence clearly to be successful.
Yeah, this would be used
this
for
military radar, not airborne radar. This is for protection.
Day two, which was October 2nd, we wanted more admissions as to his knowledge that this was illegal under U.S. law.
And we needed him to make redundant acknowledgments of that.
Large network of all people working together.
Yes. Darius was trying to have Artabili, in his own words, admit and acknowledge the fact that he was involved in an unlawful act with his co-conspirators, Patrick and Darius, and that he understood that this was a conspiracy and he was breaking the law. But Darius didn't want to use the word conspiracy.
IEI is this large group of people with this collective purpose of acquiring military equipment. You are all working together.
They're having this conversation, and it's kind of a circle conversation. They're just talking about it and talking about it, because, you know, some words just don't translate from Farsi into English that well. And lo and behold, in the Hotel Tbilisi hotel room, there's four books on the shelf, and one, truly, just by chance, is an American dictionary.
Just to look at your connections, we are calling this
network.
I'm always with my dictionary.
Darius referred to it once as the magic show. And that's actually a pretty accurate description of it, because it's all an illusion to get Artabili to say what they need.
All of these people that are all together, it's conspiracy. It's when all are agreeing, so it is, you have this big conspiracy.
Yes.
And they are all trying to get weapons and parts.
So that kind of solidified the fact that he understood that he was in a conspiracy to acquire these parts illegally.
And this is so illegal, what we are doing. You know this. You know it is against the law, but I tell you, in America, this is dangerous.
Yes. So Darius is extremely intelligent. I used to tell him all the time, he's playing chess, most other people are playing checkers.
I turn off the light. Black market. Good demonstration. I want no misunderstandings.
No. Good profit,
But I really dangerous. Know that. I really know.
We've proved that he has knowledge of what he's doing. He knows it's illegal. We knew that these components definitely were for military purposes.
And if you can give us more information of what the customer is wanting, then we can start the relationships today.
So now, at this point, we wanted to see if he knew what Iran's military intent was.
If the United States come to war, and the government could defense, it would work, because they think the war is coming.
We asked him what he wanted the technology for, and he said the Iranian government wanted it because they were preparing for war with the United States. That was in 2007. That's very scary.
At the end of it all, he said the war is coming, which it was his way of saying his country wanted to use all the scuffs because they feared the United States was going to attack Iran.
So he does understand what it's for. I think he didn't particularly care because he was a businessman trying to make money. This was how he was going to make money. And now, of course, what we needed was to complete the transaction.
They should provide the money for the NACAM for you as soon as possible after you see.
That'd be great.
That is a deal.
At this point, I said, we've got everything. We've accomplished our objective. This meant it was time to finish the job and take Artabelli down.
One thing that people outside of undercover work might not understand is,
I really love you and love you as a friend.
It is not a particularly pleasant thing to do.
I hope that you have the same opinion.
One is destroying the life of someone who trusts you.
Was a really bad one.
Darius had to go out to see what it was.
For the customer, I will set a meeting and will inform you as soon as possible.
Police officials from the Republic of Georgia came in and arrested Amir, his father. And I was put under arrest as well.
Amir, what's going on?
The sting, the arrest, every single thing I did was directed towards that final goal.
The takedown team was in position to finally arrest Artabelli.
So we were arrested together, essentially, and then they quickly took Amir and his father out of the room.
They made it look like they were arresting Patrick and Darius, but it was a less physical event, and they merely stood them up in handcuffs.
Right after they took him away, his father was arrested, but then released pretty quickly. And also, I was released, and then the Georgians took over and took him to their facility and were booking him on local charges.
The crimes were export control laws and money laundering laws that Georgia has and the United States has.
Artabelli was brought back to the United States in 2008. He pled guilty to all the counts in the indictment and received a sentence on all those counts of 5 years.
Only 5 years?
The sentence, if you want my personal opinion, that sentence was too low, and the sentences for all arms exporting defendants are too low. But the judge was following the sentencing guidelines, and in that context, it was an appropriate sentence. And so he served his sentence and was deported back to Iran.
Let
There are a fair amount of resources that were put in to get Amir over a course of years, but it is worth it because not only did we get Amir and we stopped his activity, at least for the time being, but we also got his network.
We had his laptop, and we were using the laptop to develop cases against people who we suspected had been his sources of supply in the United States. And ultimately, we did a number of spin-off investigations and charged something like 11 individuals and companies who had been involved in supplying Artibelli. I think one of the lessons is you need to be an optimist and you need to drive forward. I mean, this is why John Melandro was so important in this operation, why Darius was so important, PJ.
Everyone knew their role. It was a perfect storm of people. My guess is there are several thousand Artibelli types around the world trying to obtain U.S. military technology to ultimately one day use it against the United States.
For me, that accentuated the importance of arresting Artibelli, but also arresting other people like Artibelli. That's the kind of case the U.S. government needs to be doing if it's actually going to bring down procurement networks.
I want people to know that counterproliferation and the results of the proliferation of our technology have dire consequences because the United States still has the technological edge in the balance of fields. And if we hope to maintain that, we have to watch out for the proliferation of our technology.
I believe that it's always a good thing to make a case against anyone who is genuinely involved in the black market arms trade. Douglas MacArthur said the wars are won or lost by an eyelash. Every time we make an apprehension, there's a chill that goes over the whole industry. It truly is the shot heard round the world.